Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel. We start off with an open discussion of issues in the news. And let me introduce the panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
And WAMC's Ray Graff on the panel this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable@wamc.org if you would like to email us. If you would like to comment on our webpage and post it and put it out into the social world, then all you have to do is go to wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable, and we would love to hear from you. We have a lot to talk about this morning, a lot of stories to mention, and I guess we'll start with the funeral of Mario Cuomo, which is happening at 11 o'clock in Manhattan, and we are going to be covering the funeral live. Alan, you'll be hosting with Benita Zahn. It'll be on TV and the radio.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've done that. Ray Graff just bawled me out for wearing a white shirt.
He said,
it simply isn't done. You're supposed to wear a blue shirt on television.
Or just off-white, so you don't wash out on... You don't want to wash out those well-tanned Chartok features.
Did you say something about a certain bald person who was also on television?
Well, when there are bald anchors, they would traditionally, in the old days, put spray starch on the head to cut the glare. That's a true story. That's how it's done, without naming names.
That's so interesting when you talk about Jack Arnicky that way.
Don't do that. Sorry, Jack.
There are many, right? Bald anchors.
Sure.
That have.
But Alan had to go and mention it.
Yes, you did.
Yes,
you.
I know.
Thank
I
you
know.
For that.
Yeah. Had to out him, as it were. We were talking about the funeral. So that is.
That's taking place at
11 o'clock, in Manhattan, and so we'll be carrying the funeral live from 11 to 1. And yesterday, Mike, we saw the wake with many people, hundreds of people lined up for blocks. Paul Grondahl had a great article in the paper this morning talking about the scene in New York yesterday of many people looking to pay their respects to the former governor.
Yeah, people stood in line for hours outside of the Manhattan Funeral Home. Paul talked to a lot of people, actually, who had come down from the Capital Region, former aides who had worked with the governor, who remembered him fondly, lots of politicians, but also, athletes, actors, all kinds of people from all walks of life who came to express their, appreciation. Of course, the vice president came in, Joe Biden came in, but there were people like, George Stephanopoulos, State Senator Ruben Diaz, Chuck Schumer was there, just all walks of life. And but people, as you walk through the line, like he spoke to Isaiah Thomas, the basketball great, who just had a personal friendship with the governor. The governor liked to play one-on-one. In fact, Paul Grondahl has played one-on-one over the years in basketball with Cuomo, and he would play others and was a very competitive person on and off the court, as they say. So people were coming out.
He loaded
out in droves.
The teams,
He did.
He put his top state policeman on it. I've been told.
Yes,
and that he would that the rumor was around that if you lost, you went to the northern borders.
Yeah, that was whenever the governor's softball team would play the legislative correspondents, they'd bring in the ringers from the state police. And the penalty was, I believe, Saranac Lake or someplace like that to be assigned. But that's just a rumor.
Yeah,
that
was Lake
without question, though, the teams were formidable that went up against the
By the way, Joe, we've already had one letter on this from Irene, who says, the passing of Mario Cuomo will lead to a better New York State. His son will become invigorated, unlike Chris Christie, who is for himself. Andrew will make New York State a place that will be better than ever.
Isn't that interesting? That's a neat analysis. What will all the attention given to Mario Cuomo and his legacy do? How will that condition Andrew Cuomo and perhaps alter his approach to his own governorship? That's a very interesting question.
We really don't know that. We do know that he said yesterday, it was very touching, that he had a hole in his heart. He didn't think it would ever be cured.
They were really close.
Oh, boy.
Always
were they ever.
Yeah.
Again, the funeral will be this morning at 11 a.m., and you will you'll be able to hear it live on WAMC. You'll be able to watch it on WNYT, News Channel 13 in the Capital District. And Alan will be hosting with Benita Zahn, so that'll be happening today and coming up later on this hour. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other issues, other New York State stuff, and we'll be in other areas as well. We'll be back right after this. We'll be back right after this.
Fire Equipment, offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley. Family-owned since 1956, GordonFire.com. And Waka Waka, solar-powered phone chargers and lights for anyone in the world living without access to electricity. Share the sun, waka-waka.com.
Welcome back to the round table. Were you giggling over the little
whoa. Singing along? Sure.
We're trying to. It's hard to get that high, as it were. We were talking about the funeral of Governor Cuomo, and we should mention that the news was released that Bess Meyerson passed away. She died in middle of December. She died in December on December 14th, but it was just made public yesterday. She was 90 years old. She died at her home in Santa Monica, California, and died in relative obscurity, as the New York Times puts it, in which she lived her last years, had not been publicly announced, but was confirmed on Monday by public records. And certainly a woman who was in the public eye for many, many years.
You know, one time, Joe, we were having our fun drive, and you were sitting there, I was sitting there. We got a telephone call because Bess Meyerson was staying at our house. She
really?
Yeah.
She had, former Miss America at your home?
That's right. She had come up to the Berkshires to a famous establishment. And when she was done, Roselle had a friend, and the friend asked if it would be okay for Bess to come and spend a couple more days. We were at the end of a fun drive, and the phone rang, and there was Bess Meyerson, who was saying, Bess Meyerson, and she gave a fair amount of money, like $300, as I remember it, and she put on the sheet, please say, former so-and-so commissioner in New York, former first Miss America. She listed all of the things on the thing that she wanted us to read, and so we did. But when I went home, I was told, Alan, you are not to mention her trial, because remember she went on trial for trying to basically bribe a judge. I don't know if you remember this whole thing.
Yeah.
She had a daughter and there was an ex-husband, and I don't remember the whole thing. So I walked in there and I said,
she didn't put that on the sheet?
No.
It wasn't a rap sheet.
The one thing I'm not allowed to do is talk about the trial. So I sit down, she said, how do you do? Let me tell you about the trial. Let me tell you about when I was on trial. It was really wild.
She was a famous friend of Ed Koch, right?
Yes, because the New York Post was trying to get Koch elected. So they kept showing pictures of Koch and Bess Meyerson holding hands and saying, will they get married? That was the, will they hitch?
That was the narrative they were
pushing. That was the narrative the New York Post was pushing at the time.
And so I remember that it was the best mess, right? That
the
was
what it was. Best mess.
The That's best right. mess. That's what
it
the tabloids
fits so well in the
it.
Wood on the New York tabloids.
And she told us, by the way, sitting there that day, that she thought that she was going to be convicted, and she was prepared to do her, quote, year in a day. Those were her exact words. And she got off.
And then after that, what a rather quiet life after that, and was and again we just found out of her passing, was confirmed yesterday, and yep. New York Times reported it. So just make mention of that as well. Let's go to other stories. Unless we have letters, Alan.
Well, if we have letters, I'm going to be the first to read them.
Mm. All right,
and the last.
But so far, I don't see any. No.
All right. So let us go back then to other business, and we will we'll check in with stories that we are. That we're talking about, and so we'll stay in New York City for a moment. And Alan mentioned this yesterday as a possibility, and it's been confirmed that for two straight weeks, New York City police officers have sharply cut back on making arrests and issuing summonses throughout the five boroughs, magnifying the growing divide between the city's police force and its mayor, Bill de Blasio. Officers made half as many arrests in the 7 days through Sunday as in the same week a year ago. In the entire city, 347 criminal summonses were written, down from 4,077 a year ago. You also have to think about these 2 weeks, or the holiday weeks, where everyone is in New York City. Whether there's
and
major
parking
events,
their cars in the wrong place,
right? Yeah, you know, so right. Parking and traffic tickets dropped by 90%. So pretty much, it seems like you could have parked anywhere if you were headed into the city over the holiday weekend. But what does this mean? And obviously, it's concerning when the police force is not doing their job that they had done a year ago intentionally.
Look, this is the way it is. The people elect the mayor. The mayor selects the police commissioner. The civil authority is in charge of the military or semi-military group. When the police start to make the decisions on their own about who will be arrested and how many people, that's very dangerous. I'll tell you why, because it's the first step to what every other society. The beauty of the American experience is that the military report to the executive branch, to the elected branch. And once you start seeing that breaking down, that is, now I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's the road to a coup.
But that's not, the police is not a military organization.
One could argue that if you want, but they are. They have control of. They have. And by the way, Ray, you don't have to go far to other countries to see that the police often, you know, act as the military. That they do, or in conjunction with the military. So, so that's why I think it's so dangerous that they're doing this.
But I would just add to Ray's point that a military officer is bound by a higher calling than his First Amendment rights, or her First Amendment rights are come second to the support of the chain of command. Police officers don't have an explicit block on their First Amendment rights, and that would be what they argue here.
But also, as pointed out by police officials, all the 911 calls have been responded to.
Well, yeah, but still, you have a situation where I read in one of the tabs this morning that the tickets and the other things are down 90%.
And that's 90, big money.
90%.
That's
money.
The summonses.
That is not their job to make that decision. That is the job of the people who are supervising them and are at the top. And so there you have a very bad precedent. And in all honesty, I love both of you, but I disagree with you. I think.
What part of our argument are you disagreeing with?
I'm arguing that it's not quite the military and it's not quite the same thing. But they've got guns. They've got power.
But you have insubordinate police here, and that's dangerous. I agree.
Yeah.
I think when you look at the, as Alan mentioned, the tickets, the New York Times has some incredible graphics on this, but parking ticket moving violations, criminal summons down like 90%. Arrests down last week and Christmas week for major crime arrests, violent felony arrests, DWI arrests, and narcotics arrests almost by half. From a year ago of the same weeks. And then when you look at the reported major crime, robberies, misdemeanor, assaults, petty larceny, and shootings, in some cases they're just about the same. In many cases they're down 10-20%. So it's pretty interesting because it shows a definite and again intentional pattern.
Yeah. Anybody who doesn't think that, you know, ought to visit a psychiatrist. But that it's intentional. But you mentioned that you said, I think, Joe or Mike, you said it's big money. It is big money. So
yeah, the tickets was a significant
tickets,
amount
right.
of
Have you ever had a income. Ticket in New York City? I have not. We're talking $300. We're talking a lot of money. So you multiply that by a lot. They are now deciding what's going into the city coffers in terms of their own.
Should
job.
A city be run on parking tickets and violations?
Well, that's
a better question.
That's a
different issue. They take in about $500 million a year on parking violations, and if that's, you know, if that is down,
God forbid everybody 90%. Follows the law, then what? The city goes into default? I mean, isn't that a sick, twisted way to run a society?
It's completely legitimate for a municipality to recover the cost of parking enforcement from errant parkers.
People will park wherever they want, and the city will make money, and any municipality.
And they can. And Raymond, have you ever heard about budgeting? You see, they budget that money at the beginning,
so you need
so
a quota.
They can balance. No, it's not a quota.
If you're under budget, you need a quota.
Look,
isn't
Ray,
that wrong?
This is no, that's
Professor?
Not wrong. No, that's not wrong. Here's the deal.
We only have a minute, yeah. by the way.
Here's the
Go
deal.
Ahead.
The city budgets it. They know that a certain number of people will park illegally. The mayor says we're going to change it from 30 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour, and therefore we're going to ticket everybody. And if you don't ticket them, the law is not enforced, and more people die. You ever hear that?
I see. I see.
Oh, that's condescending. When
no.
I see.
No, continue. You got 28 seconds, Professor. Go ahead.
$546 million in parking fine revenue the city takes in. So
that's
if,
a lot of
if
cash.
It's down 90%, that's a big drop.
That'd buy you like two or three nights hotel in New York.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also post on the website WAMC.org/roundtable. The roundtable will continue after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We are joined by Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union. WAMC is newman.
I'm a new man. I got a new shirt for Christmas.
New man.
What color?
It's gold. I'm a new man.
Gold and then there are hills.
Yeah.
I couldn't decide on what color. And then Alan Chartok is here as well. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Want to hear some letters?
That's exactly what I was going to ask you.
Okay. So Jill says, a pundit of MSNBC mentioned last night that the fact that the police aren't making as many arrests or writing as many tickets may not be totally bad. Along with Stop and Frisk, there was also another police operation called Broken Window, which had the police going after really minor infractions, saying it would prevent bigger crimes. Now they aren't making these petty arrests, and crime in New York City has not increased, what, over 2 weeks?
We're
not talking
small,
about
a small
yeah. Okay. Okay. So that's that. And then we heard from Anthony, the mayor needs to eat crow and acknowledge that the crowds calling for dead cops is not acceptable public discourse. What reality does this guy live in? Saying such about the president and maybe other elected officials gets people in jail. That's from Anthony. Nick says, Alan, what would you consider Mario Cuomo's greatest achievement as governor?
Good question.
No, to me, governing in hard times, you know, you don't have to build a road to be a great governor. You have to bring people together. You have to govern in hard times, which he did. He didn't get handed a full deck, and that's a very difficult thing to do. Mike?
Yeah, he picked up after Hugh Carey was governor for a couple terms, where he was largely credited with rescuing New York City from bankruptcy.
Hugh Carey,
yeah. Right, yes. And and then after two terms, Mario Cuomo became governor. But it wasn't like everything was wine and roses again, mm-hmm. you know. It was still tough fiscal times. It was in the 80s. It was during the recession, the first Reagan term. You know, so he had been dealt a tough hand. I agree, Alan. And a lot of people think that maybe the strongest contribution he made was the disabled and people with disabilities. And he was committed to, social services, which were difficult to provide in a constricted budget. But that is one of the legacies that people write about him in these mm-hmm. recent days.
Yeah. Tim says the New York Police Department are brilliantly asserting how much of a revenue tool they are now, and not much else with this pseudo strike. Interesting, couple of words, pseudo strike. The police union instructions regarding the ticketing claim police should only make arrests when absolutely necessary. If that wasn't their philosophy already, it's no wonder they're already so unpopular. And Ray, you think that they're not unpopular, right?
No, I don't. I think they are popular. But what I wonder is, I have not seen anything to indicate that there were, in writing, union instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been reports that the unions have, in fact, sent out memos saying this is what we're going to do? I thought the contrary.
I've seen no memos quoted.
Me neither. But Ray, that's interesting that you say that, because this cannot possibly just be happening
spontaneously
that, you know, everybody stands up and turns their backs, or that tickets aren't being written, right?
It's funny. I think one of the heads of the Police Benevolent Association said, well, you know, people talk to each other. So yeah. that was pretty much how he described how this is happening.
Well, you know. and then Rich says, seeing the thousands standing out in the cold waiting to pay respects for Mario Cuomo, you saw how many people he moved. And then Christopher, who writes to us every once in a while, says, this is one listener who's tired of fawning over and near deification of Mario Cuomo, the great liberal. Let us remember that his tax policies were virtually indistinguishable from his contemporary Ronald Reagan. They both cut progressive income taxes and raised regressive taxes, such as excise taxes and other fees. And then he goes on way past the allowable amount of
140 characters mm-hmm. to remind you for this new calendar year 2015.
And thank you, Joe. And James says, the First Amendment right is good, but different from not doing your job because I don't like so-and-so. If I stop doing my work because I didn't like someone in my office, guess what? I'm looking for a new job, and so on and so forth. And then there are, wait a second, and James says,
yes,
at the top, I would equate the actions of the New York City Police Union to that of the U.S. Armed Forces turning their backs on the commander-in-chief or a work slowdown in defense of our country. Only chaos will ensure should civilian authority become obstructed by those delegated with police powers. And Susan says, hi, I'm looking for a list of show music from yesterday's show.
Ah.
And I can't find
that
it.
That old thing.
And John says, local, city, and state governments funded by traffic violation and parking tickets is institutionalizing racism and classism, and then goes on for quite a while. I guess that's it for now, Joe.
All right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's talk about, I really want to get to the James Risen story because I just find that fascinating. But let's first talk about the, as soon as I can actually bring it
Boehner?
Up. The Boehner vote and the drama to the House vote that is expected to take place today. Midterm election victories in November put Republicans in a powerful position, reading from the Washington Post, to move their own legislative agenda this year. But as the new Congress convenes Tuesday, there are early signs of trouble in the House with the GOP's expanded majority. House Republicans are facing some of the same divisions that have hobbled their efforts to govern over the past 4 years, particularly on fiscal matters. So House Speaker John Boehner of Ohio is again the central figure in a now familiar drama as he faces a revolt from rank-and-file GOP conservatives who want to deprive him of a third term as Speaker. It seems as though we have this as a third term, and all three times we've talked about the difficulty that John Boehner was going to have in getting votes because of the troubles of making amends with the conservative
party. Well, I don't know that there ever are enough amends. I mean, what we do see, Joe, as you know, is the specter of it's never conservative enough. So you get a conservative congressman running, and somebody else comes in, and they say he's some kind of lackey, and that he's not really conservative enough. You get out conservative, and that is where Boehner's problem is right now. He will not lose. I mean, he's not going to lose.
The numbers aren't there for him to lose, right?
So does it then indicate that there will be that we're going to see the same kind of trouble? Though the word the Post used was hobbled, that we're going to see a continuation of that, of a division within the party that will hobble the efforts of the GOP, even though they have.
I think so, and I think that's what the Democrats are hoping for, that they go that they go so far to the right that, because you know, you have to capture the middle to win elections. Primaries are where people turn out who are generally conservative in the Republican Party and probably, but not always, a little bit more liberal in the Democratic Party. And then you have people like 15% of the electorate calling the shots as to who the candidates are going to be. So the Democrats win if the Republican Party gets so right-wing that the middle is basically annoyed.
So two very specific questions for you. One, how does John Boehner handle it? Two, do you think he is doing slash has done in the past a good job of balancing those divisions?
He's still in power.
Balancing right. divisions when you're the... Look, I think you make an artificial dichotomy between wings of parties. In other words, there is a continuum.
See, I was just filling time. I didn't know I was actually making an artificial dichotomy.
There's a continuum. There should be a continuum of ideas. No, it should not be a monolithic entity. People should have their own ideas. There's a liberal wing of the Democrats. Just because there are X number, a small number of Republicans, doesn't mean that it's the entire party.
Yeah, but Ray, they've been winning primaries. That's the point. They've been winning primaries, and that scares everybody else, because if they see their colleagues losing to people who are out-conservatizing them, then they get
worried. Out-conservatizing.
Well, it is now.
I
look
get it
up in the Shark Talk Dictionary. You know, then that's what happens. But, and I think that's, look, we've seen it again and again. You get a guy on the left side running for the Democrats and somebody who's more moderate running for the Republicans. The Republicans win.
But legislating and governing has to be a different book than campaigning and winning elections. In other words, you have to do some work at some point once you're in the office,
well,
don't you?
Well, some of these districts are now drawn up with heavy conservative, you know, through a reapportionment, heavy conservative districts. They're able to stay in power just by being in there and voting against everything.
And let's not forget that Boehner, in order to understand this, has put this guy in as the third-ranking person in the Republican Party, who is now outed as having, you know, made
overtures to the Duke group.
To the Dukies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The Dukies. Yeah.
With no Doonesbury connection.
It's not all smooth sailing for Speaker Boehner, but he does remain in power. And I don't know the breakdown, Alan, but he gained 13 seats midterm elections. Were most of those ultra-conservatives, or were there moderates in there?
I think this is the most since Harry Truman. I think I read that in terms of the numbers of Republicans.
Strictly
in the
numbers, but I mean the new
What's
members.
What's the makeup?
Yeah,
of,
I mean, I just don't know if moderates came in or if Tea Party types came in. Yeah.
Mm. By the way, speaking of which, a natural segue, there's been an announcement from Chris Gibson. He's been on the station many times. Joe,
the
do you want
19th, the 19th district congressman.
And he says
he will not run again.
So He said right from the beginning that he believed in term limits and that he was going to abide by term limits. But I think everybody thought he'd get one more in.
It'll be the end of his third term in 2006.
Yeah. So that would be 6 years. He said, I think I remember him saying 8 years.
Timing of the announcement's interesting. Early. Yeah, I mean, they're just starting work.
Yeah. I like it, though, because it's
it frees him up to be.
It frees up the other people to make, you know, to get the money that you have to run in the in the district. But it also, he doesn't have to be going out and saying, I'm campaigning, I'm actually going to work for the district for 2 years.
He doesn't have to get on the phone and raise money, isn't that
But amazing? Is he going to run for governor?
Well, see, I think you have put your finger right on it, Ray. I think, look, I know him fairly well, and I like him a lot. I don't know that I would vote for him because, you know, I don't know
if he supports. He is the most moderate Republican congressman. Yeah. I mean, he really is among the top three most. No, truly. I mean, in the ratings.
Coming on Ray, you can't vote for him because you live in Massachusetts.
Well, of course, that was a hypothetical. That was a hypothetical vote.
I believe that was an artificial edifice. Is that correct, Ray?
Artificial dichotomy.
That was
a different argument. Okay, yes, continue.
But I like him very much, and I got to tell you, I have great respect for him, and I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see him run for higher office.
Hmm. We're going to take a break. You're being summoned, sir.
Oh. Yes. Oh, there he is.
Yes, you are.
Your producer's waiting.
Okay, this is a busy morning for me.
You got a lot to do.
I apologize
to all of
you.
You're going to leave, and we're going to talk about cable TV.
We'll talk about ESPN.
Well, yeah, that's what we're.
I order you to talk about ESPN.
That's exactly what we're going to. That's cable
TV. You've now told us everything you know about ESPN.
Yes. And then and Alan has to go, but he will be on our airwaves at 11 o'clock with Benita Zahn from News Channel 13.
Change that shirt, Alan.
And co-hosting with Benita the coverage of Mario Cuomo's funeral. I was going to go to a break so Alan could leave.
But he just left. He's very relaxed.
Who needs a break?
You know. Comes and goes like Bob Hope, really.
Yes.
Thanks for the memories.
Just one add to the Chris Gibson story. Today was also the day, is also the day at noon when Elise Stefanik from the 21st Congressional District of Northern New York, including parts of the Capital Region, will become the youngest woman ever to be a congressperson.
Wow.
So, history.
History indeed. We are going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue. Hey, I hear we got a good ESPN story. We'll talk about that. And
better be good. We got 10 minutes.
Much more. Build up, you're, right? You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Hudson Valley Fresh Dairy, a partnership of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farms providing fresh local milk, cream, sour cream, and yogurt to their neighbors. HudsonValleyFresh.com. And Green Conscience Home and Garden, Saratoga Springs, New York, a green design showroom dedicated to healthy interiors with non-toxic flooring, wall finishes, beds, and more. Green-conscience.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. We are left with Ray Graff and Mike Spain.
The dregs, ladies and gentlemen.
The dregs, the leftovers. Yeah.
Not at all.
Just reheat us, we'll be fine for another 8 minutes.
We wanted to discuss, we were talking about the ESPN story. It's actually a fascinating story. I have a couple of questions about it.
Yeah.
And so... For many TV viewers, the only reason to keep paying for expensive cable subscriptions is to watch sports, and for that, they invariably need ESPN, the powerful network that has exclusive rights to many of the country's most popular football and basketball games. Now, that linchpin is being removed. For the first time ever, sports fans will be able to watch ESPN's programming streamed online to their tablets, their laptops, their TVs, their smartphones, all without paying a cable or satellite bill. But you do have to pay $20 a month. Viewers will also be able to watch CNN, the Food Network, and the Cartoon Network. Those audiences are cross-pollinated, yeah. I believe. I believe they're all very similar. Through a new streaming service called Sling TV, Dish Network, which is launching Sling, so the service will debut sometime later this month.
I mean, they're just following suit to watch Showtime and HBO have started to do.
CBS.
Right, and they're breaking away from the cable delivery system altogether in some cases. And because of the availability of broadband internet almost everywhere now.
Supplied by?
Sometimes the cable companies, Ray.
Very often.
Yes. But because of that and the growing reliance on, you know, mobile devices to do your TV viewing and do your internet, this is the only way to go. It's the only way to survive. And it isn't going to be good news for the cable companies.
So here's my question.
Unless they sell you internet.
Well, but here's my question. I don't know the average person pays for cable a month, but my bill's pretty high.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm talking just for the cable part, not with bundled with everything else, but just for the cable TV itself.
Yeah.
However, if you and people have been talking about this for years, the idea of a more a la carte system.
Correct.
So if you say, okay, I want HBO, I want this, I want that, and you're paying 15, 20 bucks, 10, 15, 20 bucks a shot for each service, at what point does the consumer say, which is why I think the Sling TV thing is interesting, because they're saying, all right, for $20, we're going to give you these. And it's not just one service, it's many.
But it has to. For this to work, it has to be one of these Sling TVs or whatever you want to call Amazon TV, whatever. It has to be everything. It has to be everything for it to be a true success. And once it's everything, is that different than cable?
Well, unless it's cheaper.
But will it be when everything is included? Unless you do a la carte, in which case cable could do a la carte and be cheaper too.
But also what will is what's going to happen that we get into a Netflix mentality where instead of waiting for show by show by show of The Good Wife or NCIS or whatever the case may be, that we just get. They just lay 13 episodes on us, and we watch it at our own,
The House of Cards approach.
Right.
Yeah, binge watching.
Binge watching. And so that we don't really need the networks, even the networks anymore.
But ESPN, to Ray's point, ESPN is different because you can't binge watch the entire NFL season.
No,
Wait for the events, right. You have to wait for the events to happen at this point, at least. And it's such a known brand, as you were saying, Joe. You know, it is the place where everybody has to go exclusively in many cases for certain sports. And so they have something very unique, and they're trying to reach people who aren't tethered to televisions, who are out, And the other thing too is there are devices now so that you could still use these services like I guess this one in Sling TV on your television. You can stream it off of your computer onto your TV or off of your iPad onto your TV.
So. I wondered because the NFL is in on this as well, as is the NCAA and other NBA, where they're saying, okay, we have our own services. If you want to watch the games on your tablet, you can pay us however much money and get these services, and we'll give you this many screens, and you can watch the tape that the refs are watching when they're making controversial calls and so forth. And all of that, so does that fly, if you're the NFL and you say, okay, well, ESPN, you do however many of our games a season, and you're offering this way, and we're offering it this way, well, maybe we won't work with you anymore. We'll just go on and do it on our own. I wonder how that's going to develop in the contracting and licensing of sports programming as well.
Well, a lot of exclusive contracts will probably probably expire, and they'll be rewritten so that there is more opportunity. If you're strictly a basketball fan, to just get basketball, or if I'm a baseball, MLB is already, Major League Baseball kind of has its own now.
Yes, they've been doing that for a while.
So maybe they're modeling after that. But it's
there's also a lot of baseball games.
Right. You could binge watch baseball actually at the same time.
There's a lot of baseball games.
But it's a changing landscape, and how how it plays out will probably be where the money is made. The other reality here, though, is that these subscriptions that people get, online subscriptions, you've got to know that people share their sign-ons.
They do?
Yes. In fact, HBO pretty much acknowledges that. But, people, friends, college roommates, relatives share Netflix access, or they share HBO access on a lot of these. And that makes it a little more palatable, and they don't seem to be policing that too heavily.
No.
Maybe that'll change.
Sometimes they'll let you know that you have...
I've heard.
Wow, you guys are really hardcore criminals. I can't believe this.
No, this is not a hardcore criminal.
I have admitted nothing here.
All right,
I'd like
fine,
to say.
Fine. I'm a little uncomfortable by the way this is going. We've got to run this by legal.
I put it in my syllabus in classes to the students. Hey, feel free to use it.
Really?
If I'm going to pay this money,
come
use
on.
It up.
Oh, come on.
This is quite a dichotomy.
You know what?
I'm going to get the most out of this. $29.95 I'm paying. We would love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our page, WAMC.org/roundtable. Reminder, Alan Chartok and Benita Design will be co-hosting the coverage of the funeral of former Governor Mario Cuomo beginning at 11 o'clock. It will be going from 11 to 1 o'clock. And you can hear it here on WAMC.
Yep.
And
a soft start,
I believe.
It will
also be shown somewhere, we believe, shortly after 11.
Okay.
And then we're going to be expected to go to about 1 o'clock. So,
right.
And you can also watch it on Channel 13. Mike Spain, thank you very much. Always great to have you aboard. Ray, always great to have you aboard. And I know you'll love it. Thank you. The roundtable will continue after this short break.